Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me again this evening is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back.
Paul, it's championship weekend, man. I cannot believe that we are at the tail end, really, of the college football season, and it seems like the draft is only just around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. This is our 14th edition of Around the Country. We did one leading into week one, previewing week one, previewing the season, and here we are. The regular season is basically finished. It's championship week. There's a lot to preview, a lot of interesting prospects that we're going to have our eyes fixated on this weekend. But before we do that, let's take a look back at what happened this past weekend, some things that stood out in the box scores, on film, and things that, you know, some names declaring officially for the NFL draft. So let's get right into it with the NFL draft report for week 13. I think I'm actually going to start right there. Usually we start the quarterback position, but I know you like talking some wide receivers. That's your favorite. I'm going to start the wide receiver position, and I want to just, you know, talk about two guys that declared in the last week, and that is DK Metcalf out of Ole Miss. He was having a really strong season. He's a guy that's been on in the Devy community. You know, people have been talking about him for years. He finally started to emerge as a big-time player earlier in the year, suffered, unfortunately, a season-ending neck injury, but he's put his name in the hat, and there's a lot of buzz about DK Metcalf. Some people saying top 10, some people saying wide receiver one in this class. So I want to get your take on him and go back and forth a little bit about DK Metcalf. And then also another guy we've talked a lot about, but it's officially declared, and that's N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State. Another guy, some people have him as their top one or two. Some people have him, you know, in that 5 to 7 range, but he's a guy clearly in the mix, is, you know, a either round one or day two type prospect. Two big wide receiver names officially in the 2019 NFL draft. What are your thoughts on them declaring, and maybe just, you know, quick synopsis on what you like about their game, or maybe you're a little bit concerned about?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, first of all, I'm really ecstatic for these guys because I think that when you look at them as overall prospects throughout their college career, I think these guys came in, you know, with the intention and the pedigree, so to speak, to really kind of take the college football world by storm. And I think they each did that in their own respective ways. I think they fit
both of them really fit that prototypical kind of wide receiver frame that you're looking for at the next level. Of course, I mean, you know, DK Metcalf probably coming in right around 6'4", 225 pounds. And then when you look obviously at N'Keal Harry, it's really not much different. I mean, you're talking roughly about the same frame in terms of 6'4", 220 plus. So, I mean, you're talking about two guys that when you actually look at them in terms of their, you know, anthropomorphic kind of like height, weight type of size, they give you everything you're looking for at the next level. I think that when you talk about them as players, I think there's room to be optimistic at what their ceiling could be, but I think that there's something to be said about what their limitations may or may not be. And again, going back to what really the emphasis was for me this year, my emphasis was really on kind of the level of skill that they possess. And to me, that's different than looking at their ceiling or looking at their overall physical capabilities. It's not just looking at their athleticism. It's looking about how they apply that athleticism on the football field and how they really create opportunity and create points for their team. I think when you look at N'Keal Harry, again, this is going back more towards my preseason analysis. And as we get closer to the draft, I'm going to rewatch all of these guys again. But my first real kind of gut instinct with him was play strength and his ability to attack zones and really his hands and his contact fidelity. So for me, that means that, you know, when it came to really fighting for the football or kind of surviving in collision-based situations, N'Keal Harry was very good. That's where I think he was the strongest in terms of his playability. But I think where he is a little bit limited is I think when you talk about his agility, his actual releases versus press man coverages, some of his deep speed, his actual technique in order of creating space at the line of scrimmage, I think this is where you begin to see some limitations for him. So I could see him being immediately effective at the NFL level, but I think there's a lot of room for development. I don't think he's as skillful as, let's say, Bryan Edwards on South Carolina is right now. And I know that's probably blasphemy for some of you out there. I don't think he's as skilled of a receiver as Deebo Samuel right now. I don't think he's as skilled of a receiver as AJ Brown right now. Now, we can argue about ceiling, but I'm looking at skill level, the ability to immediately go to the next level, plug in, play, and be successful immediately in that first game and be an effective passing option for his respective team. I think there's ways you can create things for N'Keal Harry and have him be effective, but I think there are a lot of scenarios you can point to where he may be limited right now. So he's going to end up being in my top 10, no doubt, but he's a guy that I think there's still room for growth and still room for development. Paul, what do you think about N'Keal Harry?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been on record, you know, that when I watch N'Keal Harry play, I see a Alshon Jeffery, Dez Bryant. I have noticed, though, this year that I've seen a little bit more ability after the catch than maybe I thought he had. Not that he's going to make people miss, you know, and like you talked about, like that lateral quickness or that agility, but I've seen better burst and his ability that if he catches it in a certain angle that he can, you know, I think he has decent burst when he gets into the open field, not like a juke and, you know, a shifty type of guy. You know, Demaryius Thomas at a younger age had that too, the ability to catch like a wide receiver screen or a quick slant and make a big play off of it. So I still think N'Keal Harry lives in that world of Dez Bryant, Alshon Jeffery, maybe a little bit more, you know, burst, you know, than those guys a little bit, but I don't think too much. I still have some in his route, you know, route running, some separation concerns, you know, and separation quickness that I think is going to hinder him a little bit. I think he's going to be a fascinating, you know, to see how he performs at the combine. I think he's more a day two guy. I think he's more of a round two guy. But let's be honest, when you call a guy a round two, if the NFL, you know, takes him late round one, you know, or he goes round three, I mean, we're in the ballpark here. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things now, you know, and I'm going to bring up a couple names in a few minutes that this wide receiver class kind of has a little bit of anything you want, and it's really going to be team specific. So if you need a bigger body type guy, a guy who can win at the catch point, a guy who could be a red zone threat, then N'Keal Harry fits that perfectly. If you need someone who's going to take the top off the defense and be somebody different, a more precise route runner, then he's not your guy. So, you know, I think that's my take on him. And I'll kind of just transition for a second to DK Metcalf. I think DK Metcalf is all about ceiling. I still think that I could understand why some people have him as wide receiver one. I'm not ready to say I think the NFL is going to put him there. I can see why some people who follow the draft and break down these prospects, straight ceiling, he might have the best combination of all the wide receivers, you know, because a guy like N'Keal Harry, there's some concerns. And, you know, he does this skill, but he's, you know, we're a little DK Metcalf, if he put it all together, might be the most, in the long run, the most skilled guy. But I think we're really shooting and projecting on ceiling there than what he currently possesses. And that's something that, you know, that really depends on your risk reward on the team and what they're looking for. I think he's a top 50 guy. I think definitely he's got too much upside not to be, you know, I think in the top 50, but I'm not ready to say top 10 just yet. When I heard that, I actually took a little step back that I was surprised because I hadn't really heard much top 10 talk for any wide receiver in this class. And a guy coming off a neck injury, well, let's be honest, his sophomore year wasn't that good. And he wasn't that productive. He kind of came out of the scene really impressive as a freshman, and then he started out really strong this year. But to make that jump on the limited amount of production, and you know me, I'm not a big production guy, means much when it comes to the NFL level. But in terms of draft projection, I do think NFL teams want to see guys, if they're going to invest a really early pick, I think they want to see really good production in college mixed with high measurables, high upside, and very minimal in terms of durability concerns or health concerns. So with the neck injury, the not consistent production for 3 years or 2 years, I think that might scare off some NFL teams, but I do think his ceiling is ridiculously high.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to give you guys kind of a rounded out thought on what I would say about DK Metcalf, because I agree with you on a lot of the points. I mean, listen, when we're talking about both him and N'Keal Harry, I mean, we are talking about two of the players that we think are probably two of the top skill players in this draft. So, I mean, we're splitting hairs here in terms of our perception of what they are amongst their peers in this draft. But just to kind of delineate and trying to give you some kind of scope and sequence of what these guys are, I mean, DK Metcalf to me, I mean, I looked at him and this is what I see. I think he's best suited to an option route, heavy play action, intermediate passing game. I think that's where he is good. He's good from the flanker position where he can utilize that size and play speed and play strength and his hands to really attack at the intermediate and deep areas of the field. I think he's definitely a complementary player and he's best leveraged probably from the flanker position. And the reason why I like him mostly from the flanker position is because I think that it gives him the opportunity to get to kind of that build-up speed, which is what he needs, I think, to be more of an explosive downfield threat if that's where a team wants to use him. But I think he's solid releases versus off coverage. I think he has solid to good releases versus man coverage. I think his deception within his routes, which is where I get a lot of my skill assessment from, I see solid mid-stem moves on go routes to challenge the leverage of DBs. He does a nice job shuffling his hands and shuffling some single-handed swats and taking advantage of DBs in man coverage. He has a good shuffle swat technique on outside releases and mid-stem moves and different types of stick moves that he can use. So what I'm saying is there's variability in the way in which he attacks a defender, which shows a really good kind of attunement and presence of mind, something that's a little bit more cerebral from a receiver, which I think is important as you get to the next level. I think that DK Metcalf, with his experience playing in Ole Miss, which is a very heavy option route-based system where the actual receivers are tasked with a lot more route options than, let's say, other systems, I really do think that DK Metcalf has the potential to really be a potential stud at the next level. But as of right now, he's very much in that world with N'Keal Harry. I don't know yet. I don't think his skill level is quite there yet. I see glimpses of it. He's got the hands. He's got solid to good play strength. He's got good motor coordination transitioning to a runner after the catch. I mean, he's got a good catch radius. He's got a lot of nice things about him that are very interesting, intriguing, and you can see potential. But I think that with both of them, I still think there's room for growth. I would still say that they're two of the top best skill players in this draft, but I do think that they are not the most skilled at their position. I think there are other guys that I think are ready right now to contribute immediately.
Yeah, one final note on DK Metcalf, and then I'll transition to another couple of wide receivers. When you were just describing, you know, how he fits and the role he could have, you know, the team that, you know, jumped out at me that I think he'd be perfect in? Cleveland Browns. They have the slot wide receiver with Jarvis Landry. He's taken a step back this year, but I still think he's a really good slot wide receiver. They got Antonio Callaway on the outside, who's starting to be a little bit more consistent this year, who could take the top off defenses. You put DK Metcalf in that offense. You say, where does he attack best? The intermediate routes. I think that's Baker Mayfield's bread and butter. Baker Mayfield can hit the vertical shot for sure, but I think Baker Mayfield is deadly in that short to intermediate window going through his progressions. I mean, you put DK Metcalf with Jarvis Landry, Antonio Callaway, David Njoku, and then that running game and a pass catching back. I think it would really complement each other well. I think he would fit there really well. But you're right. These guys, a lot of growth, a lot of upside still to see. I'm going to take this to a different type of player, totally different type of player. Paris Campbell this past week for Ohio State was really impressive against Michigan. Six catches, 192 yards, and two touchdowns. We're starting to see at the NFL level smarter offensive coordinators, smarter offensive game planning, maximizing the skill set of players. All of a sudden, remember how excited we were when Curtis Samuel went to the Panthers? And then last year was kind of a rookie year, got injured. They weren't taking advantage of him. You watch a Panthers game lately, every once or twice a game, not like heavy usage, but once or twice a game, you're seeing Curtis Samuel make a really big time play and impacting the game in a variety of different ways. Paris Campbell is a guy who I think, similar to Curtis Samuel, took his spot basically at Ohio State. You were telling me from the minute Curtis Samuel left, watch out for Paris Campbell. You know, and last year he didn't go off last year at Ohio State, but this year we're seeing more consistency. I like his versatility. I think he's one of those Swiss Army players who can do a lot of different things. I like his quickness. I like his agility. I like the ability for him to impact the game on end of rounds, added a slot, take a vertical shot with him. There's different things you can do with Paris Campbell, you know, and you're starting to see so much movement before the snap, and like those fake end of rounds now are becoming so popular at the NFL level. And then every once in a while they give it to the wide receiver. I think Paris Campbell adds in an element like that. That's really intriguing, and I think NFL teams are going to be enamored with him for the versatility that he provides. I think he's going to be a day two prospect when all said and done, because I think he adds a different element to a team that, you know, I think a lot of teams are looking to do other things, and I think he brings that versatility to make an offense a little bit more unique, and I think that's important in today's game.
Yeah, no, I'm going to agree with you, and I won't add much more to that just because I know we're going to kind of move on to other segments, but I will say that I think Paris Campbell is a player that is becoming more or less, you know how we talked about the devaluation of the running back once upon a time? I think you're going to start seeing the devaluation of the wide receiver one as time goes on, and we've talked about that in years past, and that's something that we started to see. I think you're going to start seeing teams really look to be a heavy ball distribution team, and they're really not going to excel in focusing with any one player. And that's not to say that, you know, you look at New Orleans, it makes me look like a liar. But it's not to say that we're necessarily wrong, because if you look at what they're doing in Carolina, I mean, you just hit on it. DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. The more you can stretch a defense horizontally, the more space that you're going to create. There's only so much you can do from the pocket. There's only so much you can do with the run game. The more space that you can threaten, which is why you're seeing a lot more motion. Let's get more motion going. Let's make those defenders think, move, and react. The more they're able to set up and settle in, the better they're going to be. You know, I watched that. I watched the film session with Doug Baldwin when he was talking about how he route runs. And they talked about Doug Baldwin was talking to somebody from the NFL, and he was talking about his route running capabilities and the amount of knowledge. You know how we talk about, like, there's no way these guys are really thinking that much. Dude, he was literally going into great detail about all the different things we talk about what makes skilled wide receivers skilled. He's like, I'm coming up to the line of scrimmage, and as I'm watching, I'm looking at where the DBs are outside of me. I'm looking where the safeties are. I'm looking at where the DB is lining up over me, whether he's an inside shade, outside shade. I'm looking at his demeanor while he's coming up to me, if he's confident, overconfident, if he looks like he's not ready. I'm looking for where he's got his first step, and this is all based on how I'm going to attack him. And you know what he said, which was beautiful? He goes, and then you know what? Then it's all a battle of wits. It's all a battle of wits, Paul, which means it's all about of how the player can react and adapt as the play unfolds. And Paris Campbell is a player that I think has tremendous, tremendous capability to adapt as the play unfolds. He has the requisite athleticism to capitalize on little informational things that he picks up. For example, just to leave it here, whenever there was a DB that was lined up in a particular shade against him, he clearly recognized it and he clearly used it to create even more space. So just because you're out of position by alignment, he knew it and he took it a step further, which was tremendously interesting. So his awareness of the details on the field is better than you think. He does not, however, have the route tree that a lot of these players do have. And as a result, I think he's going to be relegated to that Curtis Samuel role right now, which is still useful and valuable, may not be the fantasy asset you're looking for, but he could be a guy year three, Tyler Boyd, everybody hated Tyler Boyd, could be year three where all of a sudden he's putting it all together.
Yeah, he's a guy you're going to have to manufacture some touches early, but I think you put him in an offense that's got a creative mind, he's going to make some plays. So let's round up the wide receiver position like this. I'm going to mention a few names. You pick one or two, whoever intrigues you the most that you want to talk about. Some of these guys we talked about last week, so if you want to skip, you know, if you want to pick a new name out, go for it. You know, a couple of things that stood out this week. I mean, Marquise Brown in that Oklahoma-West Virginia game. You know, Antonio Brown, his cousin, on the sideline, rooting him on. 11 catches, 243 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I think when push comes to shove, we keep talking about who could be wide receiver one, who could be this. I think Marquise Brown's not getting out of the first round due to the rare vertical threat that he offers and that game-breaking ability that he offers somebody, and teams are looking for that. So he was intriguing. We talked about Emmanuel Hall last week, continued it hot. Streak he's on with 6 catches, 153 yards, and 2 touchdowns as Drew Locke's go-to guy. David Sills in that West Virginia game, 8 catches, 131 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And I always like bringing up, as I bring up David Sills, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, 100 yards and 3 touchdowns this week. Really productive year. I've had some concerns about both those guys, but all they've done is produce all year. And then while his stat line wasn't impressive this week, I did want to bring him up. Riley Ridley, one of my favorite prospects, did catch 2 touchdowns. He only caught 2 passes this week, but both of them were for touchdowns for the Georgia Bulldogs. All interesting names right there that I think are all in the mix as top 100 prospects. I'm not sure how I feel about David Sills, but I think it's possible he goes there. But all the guys I just mentioned, all intriguing names who I think could be wide receivers that we hear within the first 3 rounds of the upcoming NFL draft. Is there one or two of those guys that I just mentioned that you kind of want to share a thought or two on?
Yeah, the first guy that I'm going to really want to mention is Riley Ridley. I think when it comes right down to it, Riley Ridley to me is the absolute back of the first round stash that I would be hoping to grab in any and all leagues that I'm in if I were in a fantasy football league. Why? Because I think that he is only beginning to scratch the surface of his ability. And I don't think there's a lot that I don't believe he's capable of doing. I do think that there's still room for him to grow. I do think that there are things I want to see. But when you talk about the ability to destabilize a defender, to react, to adapt, to literally manipulate and abuse an opponent as the play unfolds and be aware of everything around him, Riley Ridley is a very, very, very good route runner. And I think that there's a lot of people who may be sleeping on him because the production, and we don't really care about production here, but still, people may be looking at him and saying, production-wise, he doesn't really have that stellar career. He's not the Nikhil Harrys of the world, the David Sills of the world. Listen, Riley Ridley is going to make a team better. He's going to be immediately impactful at the next level. He is a better version, to me, of Deion Kane. So when you thought of Deion Kane coming out, you're like, I wish he could do more. He could really beat man press coverage, but what else can he do? You know, like, that's what's holding him back. And if Deion Kane can put it all together, Riley Ridley, to me, is a better version of Deion Kane. And I think that that means to me that he's going to at least go at the bare minimum. He's going in the second or third round. And that's where I would put him at. And I think that that's a steal if somebody grabs him, because I would pay for him every day because I think he's that good of a player. And J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I don't hate J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I just think he is what he is. He's a rock solid wide receiver. I do not think that he is a player that is going to change the complexion of a passing game, but I do think he's a rock solid, effective pass catcher. and he will end up being, if he's on a team that's willing to feed him targets and willing to use him, he could be a functional player. That means he can catch the football. He can move the chains on tough downs, but I do not see him being the guy that can beat double coverage, beat good corners at a regular clip. I don't see him as that player at the NFL level. I do think he's very functional and a very good, solid player. I think he's a good depth player to fill out your wide receiver. He could be your fourth wide receiver and be an excellent component of a red zone game. That's what I think of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah, when I see Arcega-Whiteside, I think Devin Funchess, solid, solid guy, not going to be a guy who can beat, you know, elite DBs, like, you know, probably more suited to like a number two, number three, or a situational role, but he's kind of been thrust into a much bigger role for the Panthers. I kind of could see that for Arcega-Whiteside at the next level. Real quick, the tight end position. I'm only going to mention two names. The first one is Caleb Wilson out of UCLA this past week. 9 catches, 184 yards. Intriguing guy. Much more receiver than like complete tight end. But listen, people at the NFL level are looking for those guys. Wilson is a guy who, you know, talked about before the season started. I've mentioned his name a few times here throughout the season. Intriguing tight end prospect. Really good hands. I think he's a pretty solid route runner. I think he's a guy who could attack the seam and could create some mismatches against linebackers, you know, and against slower safeties because, you know, he has that capability. And then another guy in that ridiculous 7-overtime game, Jay Sternberger out of Texas A&M, 5 catches, 75 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's got pretty good size. He's a redshirt junior. I know he's a name that you mentioned to me a while ago. And then, you know, he wasn't someone that came up when we were previewing the season. And, you know, when we discussed the, you know, the scouting notebook, he wasn't a guy that, you know, that was in it yet. But, you know, I thought when I was watching that game that he was a guy who, you know, had somewhat of an intriguing skill set. Any thoughts on either of the tight ends?
Yeah, no, Jay Sternberger is a player that really kind of popped to me in the spring games. I know the spring games where you'll probably catch me in the spring as I start, you know, pontificating about players that are like, wow, he had an amazing spring game. I get it. But he was a guy that really popped during the spring game. He reminded me a lot of Foster Moreau from LSU, very much in that same vein. A longer, leaner kind of tight end in the sense that he was, you know, he was solid in terms of, you know, what I saw from him in terms of blocking, but I thought his ability at the tops of his routes, his ability as a route runner, his ability to make catches in against tight coverage, I thought was pretty good. And for that reason, I saw a very capable receiver, a guy that could end up being, you know, a little bit more of a combo tight end than we necessarily think. That's not to say that he's, you know, George Kittle, okay, who can literally block defensive ends at the NFL level by himself. Okay, that's not George Kittle. I'm not saying he is, but I do see a lot of that in him in terms of being able to do a little bit of both for a team. And I think he's going to be a really, really good second tight end on the team and a very good player to be in passing downs with at the next level. I think he's got a little bit to contribute there. So I was impressed by him and I continue to be impressed by him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. He's a guy, you know, again, I always like putting out there some new names that we haven't really talked a lot about, you know, kind of expose you to them. So if they end up, you know, being in the draft, you kind of know a little bit about their game. Let's transition this over to the running back position. Not a lot to talk about here. We talked about some of these guys last week. It's kind of a weird, you know, group as a whole, and we'll continue to talk about them from now all the way up until draft time. This past weekend, the two standouts were Trevion Williams, again, in that big, that long overtime game, 198 yards, 2 touchdowns. I think he continues to move up for me the running back rankings for the, you know, the 2019 NFL draft. You know, part of it's his breakthrough this year. Some of it's other people taking some steps back, but I like what I see out of Trevion Williams. Miles Gaskin had his best game of the season, you know, in a big game against Washington State there, 170 yards, 3 touchdowns, showing some of that quickness, some of that agility, making people miss. Again, he'll put his head down and finish runs aggressively. That's not going to be his bread and butter at the next level, but he's not afraid to mix it up. I keep always coming back to what I thought about Amir Abdullah coming out of college, and he hasn't, you know, transitioned to being a productive NFL player, but I still see that from Miles Gaskin at times at the collegiate level. Mike Weber, I thought, looked pretty solid. I continue to say that I think he's going to be a better NFL player than college player. I keep thinking like he's going to be like a guy like Chris Carson who goes like somewhere on day three and he's going to turn into a really solid NFL player. That's what I kind of see out of Mike Weber. So those are a couple guys that stood out to me. Any thoughts on those guys or any other running backs that maybe, you know, popped when you were watching some games this weekend?
I think those guys definitely popped for me. I think Myles Gaskin for me is a player that continues to be a solid player. I think he belongs again somewhere in that top 10 in this class because I think of the versatility that he brings. I've seen a lot of stuff about, you know, Bryce Love recently and everything that he's not bringing to the table this year as compared to last year. I can understand that, but I still think Bryce Love is still probably amongst the top players. A player that really stood out to me in terms of his overall skill set. You know, I watched Damian Harris when I was watching, you know, the Auburn game, and I was watching, you know, Auburn, Alabama, and Damian Harris to me, you know, I continue to live and die by what I think about him, which is I really do see, you know, a 2-3 down back in the NFL who's going to be rock solid carrying the football. You know, I think he's a player that if you got him 20 touches a game, 20, 25 touches, I think he's a player that could be really be very, very competent in getting you yards no matter what scheme you run, whether it be, you know, zone scheme or gap scheme. I think he could be very effective in both. I think he's already built for the NFL. I think Damian Harris, you can do a lot worse than Damian Harris. And I just find a lot of people continue to forget about sometimes Damian Harris as we go down the line. But Damian Harris for sure is a player that, you know, I watched, you know, in that game and I was like, wow, I was like, he's just such a great runner. And I still think he's going to be a very competent, you know, running back at the next level.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think Harris is one of those guys that, you know, I don't think this is just a year that I know we've been kind of spoiled by the running back classes, but I just kind of think you're going to see this class going to have some guys who go on day two. And that's going to be, I think we're going to go through round one and not hear a running back's name called. And then on day two, we're going to hear, you know, four or five guys. And maybe it's, you know, Rodney Anderson or Damian Harris or, you know, Miles Sanders, you know, or David Montgomery, or maybe somebody else surprises and emerges. But I think there's going to be four or five guys that go on day two. And those are the names that right now I think are in the mix. I think Harris is in that mix, but I don't think there's anybody that's kind of, you know, I thought Anderson was the guy who had a legitimate shot, and maybe he can, you know, show that he's fully healthy and can come back and do that. Maybe there's a surprise guy. Like, we didn't think Rashard Penny was a first round pick last year either. And then he went from a guy I thought was more of a third round guy, and he went late round one. You know, Sony Michel got pushed up to round one. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a couple of these guys, but I think on talent and skill alone, these are more day two type prospects. You know, if I'm investing a round one pick on a running back, I kind of want him to have a little bit more of a special skill set than I think maybe what these guys possess right now when evaluating them. So let's take this to the quarterback position to kind of round out the segment here for the NFL draft report for week 13. A couple things stood out. First off, Herbert left the game for Oregon with an injury to his right shoulder. So that's definitely something we want to monitor closely there. Justin Herbert, obviously, right now for most people, he's QB1 consensus in this class. So that's something to follow closely. Dwayne Haskins, who I think is slowly but surely moving his way up to potentially the second quarterback. And I think it was Greg Gabriel who was talking a little bit that he, if I remember correctly on Twitter, saying that Haskins has a lot of fans at the NFL level that, you know, people think he could be a big time talent and it's not getting talked about enough in terms of the NFL landscape, that he thinks he can be a pretty early pick in the first round and one of the top quarterbacks in this class. I'm right there with him. Does he have things to work on? Absolutely. But you saw this weekend, 6 touchdowns, almost 400 yards against that Michigan defense, shown a little bit more lately with his ability to move around and pick up yards when needed, but he's more of a guy who's going to play and win from the pocket. So that was an impressive performance by Haskins, who continues to, I think if Herbert doesn't come out, I think Haskins has a legitimate chance to go top 5. Drew Locke was solid this week. I already mentioned Emmanuel Hall before. Drew Locke, both touchdowns were to Emmanuel Hall. I think he's still on that first round, late first round to early second round range there. Will Greer, 539 yards and 4 touchdowns. Every time I watch Will Greer, I just kind of get excited to watch him, kind of like when I would watch Baker Mayfield last year. I've made that comparison a lot. I think there are some similarities between those two guys, their ability to play off structure, their ability to throw with anticipation and touch at times. I think there's still question marks about Greer that I've talked about, you know, throughout this year, decision making at times reckless with the ball, but I still like him. I think, again, he's another guy in that round one, round two range. And one other guy I wanted to bring up is Daniel Jones. We talked about him last week, really struggled this week. One of those games that I got to get back and watch because I wasn't did not have eyes on Duke Wake Forest. But when you look at the box score and you see 59-7 loss to a 5-6 Wake Forest team, and you see 17 of 36 for 145 yards, I mean, that is some red flag type stuff. That is, okay, that's a game that I'm going to have circled on. I got to get back and at some point watch that closely to see what kind of happened in this. You know, Jones was building a lot of momentum, and to have that type of performance against that team and look that poor, to me, throws up some red flags that have to, you know, one of those things that you have to watch and kind of figure out what happened, what transpired in that game that led to that stat line and that poor of a game there by a guy who was generating some first round buzz. So those are basically the big five that have been getting a lot of attention. You know, Jared Stidham continued his struggles against Alabama, wasn't helped by some of his teammates as well. And then one really under the radar name, and only because he's the head coach of the Giants, Kyle Shermer. The stat line this week, 31 of 35, 363 yards and 3 touchdowns for Vanderbilt. A game that, you know, is going to be intriguing to get some eyes on, you know, when it's available to watch that. Because, again, Shermer's a guy who we went through this with C.J. Beathard a couple years ago. When you have those NFL ties, I think that, you know, teams are a little bit intrigued by that because you've kind of grew up around the game, you know, coach's son, you know, stuff like that. You know, and listen, he's not doing this in some low-level conference. He's doing it in the SEC, and he's been a pretty consistent starter there for quite some time. So Kyle Shermer could be one of those guys that maybe, you know, when we have Mark Schofield on around draft time and we're talking about some of those day three names that are intriguing guys to keep an eye on, I could see Kyle Shermer being a guy that you know, that is brought up and is talked about a little bit as we get closer to the draft. Matt, any thoughts on the big quarterbacks, Haskins, the injury to Herbert, Jones's poor performance, or anything else at the quarterback position?
Yeah, just a couple of quick notes. I mean, I had a chance, obviously, to watch Dwayne Haskins play and watch that game. And I think the biggest thing about him that you really like when you watch him as a passer is you love the ability for him to effortlessly move through his reads. And I think that's something that's really important. I mean, when I watched him play in that game, you know, the difference between him and Shea Patterson were very much night and day. And that's not to say that Shea Patterson, you know, is horrendous, but I mean, Shea Patterson is a collegiate quarterback. And I think that there's very little that I've seen from his play this year that really has me kind of pounding the table for him at the NFL level. Maybe as a competent backup, but definitely not as maybe a starter. But I look at Dwayne Haskins and I look at the way in which he manages the pocket, distributes the football, and I just see a very, very calm, smooth, and confident passer. That's not to say that he is, you know, without flaw. I do think that he has some issues with accuracy, and obviously there are times where touch could be a little bit better. But I mean, Dwayne Haskins was a player that you and I said earlier in the year, very much at the beginning of the year, if Dwayne Haskins were to have a good season and he were to have the opportunity, we thought that he could easily move himself into the top of this conversation given this quarterback class. And that hasn't changed. In fact, it looks like it might actually happen. Moving on to Jared Stidham. Listen, maybe I'm the last on the island of Jared Stidham, and that's fine. I don't mind being the last guy on that island. I watch Jared Stidham, and I do think, as Paul, you've said it many times, you definitely want for more when you watch him. I just think that the man chose the wrong school for his skill set. You watch him when he was at Baylor, and he came on, and he had to go ahead and make some, you know, some really big time starts down the stretch, and everything. Social media forgets. Everybody on Twitter forgets. Everybody was ablaze with oozing how much this kid next to Josh Rosen was easily the next best quarterback. And people were watching him play at Baylor and they were like, look at the arm strength, look at the mobility, look at the accuracy, look at what he can do. He went from an air raid system to an option run system in Auburn. And he went from night and day, just philosophy, night and day. And that's not to say that that you know, he's without, you know, error on his own. I'm not saying he's without flaw, but I do think the environment has a way of shaping the type of skill you see on the field. And I think he went to an environment that wasn't conducive with the skills that he brings to the quarterback position. And it doesn't help you when you see, listen, guys were dropping the football. Guys were dropping the football in that first game. In that game against Alabama, that first drive was terrible. Terrible. Running backs were dropping the football. Wide receivers were not catching open passes. It was horrible. the guy's trying to get something going. He's trying to get some of the flow going, and guys are dropping passes. I just think that somebody's going to take him, and I think that they're going to end up seeing that he's a pretty rock-solid quarterback. He might go the way of like a Nick Foles in terms of NFL type of usage. I could see him being that type of player, where he goes the route of it like a Nick Foles, where he has a lot of spot starts, ends up becoming something, could end up being a starter somewhere, may not, maybe a backup. He could have that type of career. I still believe in him as a quarterback.
Yeah, and it's funny you brought up Shea Patterson and Jared Stidham. Don't you think they should have went to the opposite schools and it would have been much better of a fit? Put Jared Stidham with Jim Harbaugh, what Jim Harbaugh would have wanted to do, I think, would in a pro, more of a pro style offense. Put Shea Patterson at Auburn and what Gus Malzahn wants to do. I think that would have made sense, but that's just not the way it ended up working out. I think that would have been a lot different in terms of maybe what we think about these players. So there it is, NFL rookie, NFL draft report for week 13. Let's transition it over to the Devy Slant for this week, where we take a look at some of the underclassmen that need to be on your radar, that are probably on many Devy teams. And, you know, even if you don't play Devy, you've seen these guys on Saturdays. Soon enough, they're going to be names that are being talked about regularly for the NFL draft, for your dynasty rookie leagues, and et cetera, et cetera. So a couple names I want to bring up, Matt, and kind of pick your brain on some new names that I haven't talked too much about. First is, you know, you watch Alabama and they just have they always have a plethora of running backs. I mean, you already talked about Damian Harris. There are some people that are huge fan of Josh Jacobs. Now, he's a junior. He's eligible. I don't know if he's going to come out, but there are some people that think he's a really big time prospect that just kind of got lost in the shuffle there at Alabama. And then there's Najee Harris. And, you know, Najee Harris didn't put up any massive stat line or anything, like 7 carries for like 25 or 26 yards or something like that. But when I watch him play, he looks a little bit leaner and quicker than I even remember him as a guy who I kind of think gets forgotten about when we talk about those, you know, now sophomore running backs and who are going to be juniors next year and draft eligible. If Damian Harris goes, you know, I mean, once Damian Harris leaves and goes to the NFL, I think Najee Harris is going to really take control of that. And I think you could see a monster year from Najee Harris next year. And he kind of catapulted himself way back more in the contention. You know, I know people want to look at him and say, you know, maybe he doesn't have the speed and quickness of some of those other guys. I think for a man his size, I think he's got enough quickness. And I thought he even looked leaner and slimmer and a little bit more agile than I even remember when I was watching him. So that's one name. A trio of wide receivers, Donovan Peoples-Jones. I know he's the guy you've been talking up for a while. If you had any thoughts about what you saw from him this week in that Ohio State-Michigan game. Another Alabama player who hasn't been talked about much, Henry Ruggs III. I mean, 6 feet, 183 pounds, but he can fly. He had 2 touchdowns this past week. Jamon Osborne hasn't emerged this year, I think, as we expected, but he's another big, big name. So just wanted to maybe hear your thoughts on Osborne. You know, we started this last year with DK Metcalf having a little bit of a step back in his sophomore year, but then Metcalf emerging this year. Is Osborne a guy who you could see doing that next year? And then tight end Hunter Bryan out of Washington, 3 catches, 100 yards. I think he's one of the top, you know, underclassmen tight end in the country who we're going to be hearing a lot about, you know, down the line from the tight end position. So 5 names, kind of attack them any which way you want. But I think these are 5 intriguing names to kind of maybe hear your thoughts on.
Yeah. So the first one, I think I'll start with Najee Harris. I think Najee Harris is a better, more skilled football player than people want to give him credit for. I think, yes, you're right. When you start talking about his athletic traits, I do not think he is going to blow anybody up in terms of what he's going to do on a vertical, what he's going to do with his broad jump, what he's going to do in a 40-yard dash. But if you think that's the sum total of what it takes to play the running back position, then I think you have a misunderstanding of what it takes to play the running back position. I firmly believe that there's a level of skill that has to be taken in that position where it's about what you see on the field. And I'm not talking just about vision. I don't want to sum it all up into vision, because vision, it's not what they're seeing. It's an understanding of the actual information and their ability to adapt as the play unfolds. When you watch Najee Harris run the football, the minute he has the football is the minute he starts moving and reacting, changing his plan of attack as the play unfolds. He looks and sees visually, yes, with his gaze. You can see how his head pivots from one area of the field to the next, looking for the most immediate threat and then adjusting and destabilizing the defender with the types of movements that he does. He does that both on the ground with the way in which he'll move his hips, the way in which he'll attack you with his shoulders and head fakes. He's not just trying to beat you. He's trying to play chess with you. He's playing a game with you as he's running the football. He's creating space. It's the difference between finding space and getting into space, and then there's creating space. He's the type of player that can create space. And at the next level, the NFL level, I want players that can create space. So I'm willing to say, yeah, athletically, will not test out of the gym. I get that. I'm fine with that. But I do think that when it comes to tight spaces, when it comes to the open field, Najee Harris creates a tremendous amount of space with his ability to see the field and his ability to understand what defenders are trying to do to him. And then he, in turn, will attack them with what he wants to accomplish on the field as well. He's a very, very smart football player. I really like Najee Harris. And I know people are going to say, well, what happens when you get an equally good defender at the NFL level that can, you know, stay with him? Aren't the athletic traits going to be something that's going to kind of break the tie, so to speak, and get him those extra yardages? Yeah, you're right. But you know what he does have? Great contact fidelity. His ability to win within a collision is unbelievable. When he's tackled or somebody grabs him, he can reshape his body, lower his center of gravity, and keep his feet pumping. You think that's not a skill? I challenge you to prove to me that's not a skill, because I've seen guys that literally get hit and fall down. I've seen guys that get hit and go out of bounds. Najee Harris doesn't get hit and go out of bounds. He gets hit and he remains true to his track, and he's able to readjust his body and posture to absorb the collision so he can still remain forward leaning and forward moving through contact. That's one of his elite traits. One of those traits that you won't see from every player. You know who did it very well? Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette did that very well. And I think that you're talking about a more intuitive player, a more skilled player running the football in Najee Harris than Leonard Fournette was. And I know that's, again, blasphemy, maybe, but I think he's a better player. He's going to be a little bit, if you like Leonard Fournette as a player, you should love Najee Harris. You should love him, because I think he's a quicker, more skilled version of a Leonard Fournette, which is crazy. I know that. But
yeah, I mean, listen, it's bold praise, but I just don't think we've seen him get his opportunity yet, but it's coming. He, I think, is going to get a much heavier workload next year, and I think we'll get to see a lot of the stuff you're talking about. And, you know, either you'll look like a genius for saying he's a more skilled Leonard Fournette, or we're going to have to kind of figure out why he hasn't lived up to those potential. But, you know, listen, he's going to get every opportunity next year. I think, you know.
Hey, but you know what? I'll say this, though, in my defense. Being skilled and not being able to show your skill is a lot of other things than just the player. So, I mean, Leonard Fournette went to a perfect NFL offense for what he wanted to do. It was LSU part two.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
So if Najee Harris doesn't get that same opportunity, then, you know, I mean, it's hard to compare apples to apples. But I do think that I see a very much a same player like a Leonard Fournette in him, for sure.
Yeah. So what's transition to those wide receivers? Any quick thoughts, you know, on the three guys I mentioned, Peoples Jones, Henry Ruggs III, or Jamon Osborne?
Well, I think Henry Ruggs III continues to show this year that he can play bigger than his metrics say he can. I mean, 6'1", 175. I mean, you're not talking about a big guy here, but you're talking a lot of what, you know, it's a lot of what makes Alabama wide receivers pretty good, to be honest with you. They're feisty and relentless at the catch point. They're feisty and relentless at the catch point in terms of their ability to win in contested situations and their ability to create after the catch. Henry Ruggs has a very, very good catch radius, and he's able to make some easy catches or difficult catches look easy. But what I mean by that is he has a very good feel for where his opponents are on the field and how to adjust to the passes in the air. He can do a lot of that very easily. And then after the catch, he's very strong. He has the ability to get those tough extra yardages despite the fact that he does not have that size. And again, it goes back to what I was just saying about Najee Harris. If you don't think your ability to win in collisions is a skill, then tell me how Jerry Jeudy does it so often. Tell me how guys that are small, like Henry Ruggs, can win in contested situations and after the catch. How do they beat a safety? How do they win those collision-based battles? because they have an ability to contort their body, absorb contact, lower their center of gravity, and win. It is a skill, and some guys have it. Henry Ruggs has it. And when you look at Donovan Peoples-Jones, I think Donovan Peoples-Jones is only beginning to scratch the surface of what he's capable of. I just don't know. I don't know if he's going to put it all together. I mean, sometimes I see great games from him where he had a great game, where he was adjusting to passes, making things happen in the open field in terms of his ability to make tough catches. He did it great. I mean, he looked great in that game. But he's a guy that I still feel like I'm wanting for more. I really do. And I love what Donovan Peoples-Jones could be. Will he be that? I'm not sure. I kind of like Tariq Black a little bit more. I'm thinking he's going to end up being there. It depends on if he's healthy, but I like him a little bit more. And as Jamon Osborn goes, I think Osborn is the guy that you invest in now. And if somebody's willing to trade him for 50 cents on the dollar, you grab him because you're kind of hinting at DK Metcalf type things. Yeah, he was outstanding in high school. He was outstanding in his movement skills. His movement toolbox is unbelievable. His ability to be deceptive within his routes was great as a high school player, and it barely has begun to scratch the surface at the collegiate realm. I mean, he just hasn't gotten the opportunity to be the focal point of an offense. I think that could be coming, but he's a guy that I would invest in. If somebody's willing to part with him for 50 cents on the dollar, I'll take it.
Yeah, and then the last name, Hunter Bryant, is he a guy who should be on people's radar similar to Cole Kmet at Notre Dame? Is he one of the top underclassmen tight ends?
Absolutely. He was already pegged to be the best tight end this season if it wasn't for the injury. If it wasn't for the injuries that he was dealing with. And he was already pre-selected to be one of the top tight ends in the country, even amongst even the guys that were potentially draft eligible. That's how high he was being touted as like the best tight end in the country other than Noah Font. I mean, that's how high he was being regarded. So I would absolutely say that. And I think Cole Kmet's right there as well. But, you know, we'll have to see how the season unfolds. But I mean, as the season ends and we go into the offseason, we'll see how it all goes. But Hunter Bryant should absolutely be a player that you guys should keep your eye on and keep watching.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say one thing about Cole Kmet. I mean, Alzay Mack, all the word is that he is declaring and he's going to go. So that is going to be Cole Kmet's job next year. So he hasn't really had much of a statistical big season this year. So Cole Kmet might be one of those guys that, you know, in your Devy Leagues kind of check in on the Cole Kmet owner, maybe, you know, not doing much this year, could be a guy who could be had. And I think he's a guy who, you know, come next time this year, I think we're going to be talking about is him as one of the top, you know, tight end prospects in that 2020 NFL draft.
Paul, before we transition, just for all you Devy guys out there, you Devy fiends, just a quick thing. Last call for Travis Etienne, because you're not getting him after this year. Last call and last call on Justin Fields, because there might be people holding out that Justin Fields is going to transfer and it's going to end up being shenanigans and he's never going to really play. Okay. There's just last call on those guys. And also, check in on the Jake Fromm owner. Last call. Because you're not going to get those guys. Jake Fromm's going to end up being maybe Alex Smith part two at the NFL level, I think, at worst. So those things are going to be there. Last call on Justin Fields. Last call on Travis Etienne. It's time to go get those guys now. And last call on Teague Higgins. I mean, you're just not getting him after this year. If he's probably already scooped up already, you're not getting Teague Higgins after this year.
Absolutely not. I've talked about T. Higgins a lot this year. I think right now, I think him and Jerry Jeudy are two of my favorite underclassmen prospects that we'll be talking a lot about in the summer. And I love your call on checking in on the Fields and Fromm owner, because there could be some nervousness with those two, because the Fromm owner could be thinking to myself, is Justin Fields going to take this job? And then Fromm's going to be a backup next year. Is Fromm going to transfer? And then if he transfers, you know, how's he going to look at his new thing? Is he going to have to sit out a year? Is he going to have to do this? And then if the Justin Fields owner might be saying, well, look at Fromm, you know, he's still the guy there. Am I going to have to wait, you know, another year before I even get to see Fields on, you know, play at the college level? It's all those things that could get their owner to be a little bit nervous, a little bit more open to maybe moving them if you entice them with the right package. So I like those calls a lot. So let's take this over to the tail of the tape, where we take a look ahead to this upcoming week's games and the prospects that we should be having a close eye on. There's not a lot to talk about this week. I mean, it's championship week, you know, week 14 here. There's five big games, the big five conference championship games. We talked a lot about these players already. So I'm going to run through real quick things that I'm looking for. And then you kind of, you know, pick it up, Matt, on, you know, kind of elaborate a little bit more on anything that you're really hoping to see this week or some other names that maybe I left out. Obviously, the Pac-12 championship, Utah versus Washington. I already brought up, how does Myles Gaskin look? Obviously, battled some injuries earlier in the year, looking a little bit better, coming off his best performance last week that we've seen all year. And obviously, just recently mentioned, Hunter Bryant. How does he keep it after his monster Week 13 performance? In the Big 12 championship, we got Texas, Oklahoma. You got the two wide receivers from Texas, Little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson, two guys who I think could play at the next level, you know, have had some, you know, really impressive performances this week, not consistent from week to week, but you see, you know, you see some things jump out off the page at you from time to time. Big game here. Oklahoma, obviously, defense is very poor. This might be an opportunity for Humphrey and Johnson to really have big performances here on the national stage in the Big 12 championship. On the other side, obviously, you know, Kyler Murray, the quarterback for Oklahoma, and then Marquise Brown, obviously going to be a very highly regarded prospect in terms of the upcoming NFL draft. The SEC championship, Alabama, Georgia. I mean, we talked about Jake Fromm, Justin Fields, you know, Riley Ridley, you know, the list goes on and on. Elijah Holyfield, DeAndre Swift. I've been waiting for them to unleash DeAndre Swift for like 25, 30 touches. Maybe this is the week. Maybe this is the week they unleash Justin Fields and have a whole bunch of special stuff for him. Because listen, when we've seen teams beat Alabama, it's usually with a very mobile and athletic quarterback. Maybe they have some stuff in the woodworks with Fields this week to, you know, to maybe make some big plays in this game. On the Alabama side, obviously Tua, you know, his Heisman coronation probably takes place this weekend. We already talked about the stable of running backs, Najee Harris, Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs, all of them, Jerry Jeudy we brought up, Henry Ruggs, Irv Smith, all those guys. How did they perform in this huge game here for Alabama versus Georgia? The ACC championship, Matt just brought them up, Travis Etienne, T. Higgins, two guys. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence, we're huge fans of him. And then Hunter Renfro, great slot wide receiver. And then in the Big Ten championship, Northwestern, Ohio State. Ohio State coming off of that huge win last week against Michigan. Do they have a little bit of a letdown spot? Can Haskins look great again? The running back tandem between Dobbins and Weber, always fun to keep an eye on. And then Paris Campbell, can he string together two big-time performances in a row after we saw him last week wreak havoc on Michigan's defense? So those are some of the big-time prospects I'm looking forward to. Matt, anything that you want to elaborate on the names I brought up or a couple other guys that maybe I didn't mention, a little bit more under the radar that you want to keep a close eye on?
Well, the biggest ones that I wanted to keep an eye on, to be very honest with you, is in the Texas game, in the Texas-Oklahoma game, I'll give you a player to watch. He's only a sophomore, but he really, you could argue, he had one of the best turnaround seasons of any player in college football, and that's Sam Ehlinger. Sam Ehlinger is a true sophomore, and when you look at him, when you look at his actual size and ability and what he was able to accomplish this year, I mean, he's 6'3", 235 pounds. And he was a guy that when he first came out, I thought he was very much, I had him graded in my mind as a passer. And you know what? I thought he was going to be somebody that could develop. I wasn't sure what he was going to be yet, but I thought he could develop. Sam Ehlinger has developed into a true passer, and he's looked great this season. You could argue he's been one of the bright spots for Texas the whole year. So Sam Ehlinger, I'm watching you, comes this weekend. Also, another player to keep an eye out for, and this is somebody else that I like, is from that Devy side of things. I think Keontae Ingram is a nice player to look at on Texas as well. He's a player that, you know, I thought really was going to have to be able to show himself at the next level, and he has, and I've been really impressed with him so far. So he's a guy that I'm going to be watching as well. And then obviously the Alabama-Georgia game, I mean, it's studs upon studs upon studs. There's really not much to say, but I'm going to tell you, there's a player, though, however, in the Ohio State game that I would like to point out, and that is for sure, again, like you said before, Paul, I really want to keep eyes on Mike Weber. I want to see what we're really dealing with. I've liked Mike Weber for a long time. I think he's a player that could be very much in that Damian Harris-style mold, and I think he could be a player that may go later in the draft and could end up being really great for a team that grabs him.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've been saying all year that Weber's going to be a really rock solid pro that goes on day three. And I think he's got even a little bit more upside than maybe we've seen this year. So let's round out the night with the NFL Rookie Report for week 12. And every week I've been sitting there watching games all day Sunday, taking notes on things. And when push comes to shove, I think this is going to go down as one of the better rookie classes in terms of what we've seen on the field and the impact in fantasy and the future impact in fantasy than we've had in a really long time. I mean, let's start at the quarterback position. Baker Mayfield looked absolutely fantastic this week against the Bengals. He had like four touchdowns. I don't even care about the final stat line, but if you watched a game, making throws all over the field, his ability to scan the field and go through his progression reading, things that he did at great at the collegiate level, but usually you don't see it translate so quickly at the NFL level. It is translating, and they still need some more playmakers there. You know, the coaching change worked wonders for him. You know, they're going to, I don't know who the coach is going to be next year, but they're going to cater. They're going to see what Baker did down the stretch, and they're going to cater an offense that suits his needs. They're going to get him more playmakers. I mean, Baker looks like he's already pushing the border of QB1, QB2. I think he's a guy who's squarely going to be a consistent QB1 for a long duration of his career. When, you know, as the years move on here, Josh Allen this week showed the glimpses of why Matt and I and, you know, Sig Bloom and other people stood on the soapbox for him and said, back off a little bit. This kid has some rare, intriguing skill sets that makes him a unique prospect. We know he's not finished. We understand that, but he can do things that few human beings on this planet can do. You know, his ability, anyone who saw that 75-yard touchdown throw, he was literally about to get destroyed, stood there and threw it at the last possible second down the field for a huge play. We saw him use his legs to rush for almost 100 yards. I think he was at 101 yards, and a couple of kneel downs brought him below 100. But listen, we mentioned the name Cam Newton at times. Some people mentioned that. I always kept falling back on the Ben Roethlisberger of Miami of Ohio. Josh Allen has shown me more athleticism than I even knew he had and even saw he had. I'm starting to think that maybe the Cam Newton call is the better call, because Cam Newton at times, not a very accurate passer. Sometimes he's erratic thrower, but he makes plays happen with his legs. He's got great arm talent to push the ball vertically down the field. He's tough to take down. There's a lot Josh Allen's done this year. I think he's already done enough to warrant, you know, people who wanted to knock him. He deserved to go in the first round. And now it's, can he continue to grow and develop into a more complete player, which were always valid concerns and always concerns that Matt and I had about him. We just said he does have an intriguing skill set and he deserves to be taken in the first round because of it. Lamar Jackson threw a little bit more this week, but continues to make plays with his legs, electric player. I think we're not really going to see Lamar Jackson and his full capabilities as a passer until next year. I think if they have an entire offseason to build an offense to kind of cater to his skill set, but there are some concerns about his passing ability. Some of his passes look really poor. I think he still continues to struggle when he goes outside the numbers. Those are all valid concerns. Those are all concerns I had when watching him, and I still thought he deserved to be a first round pick. You know, it's about creating offenses to cater to their skill set and their strengths and not hone in so much on their concerns and weaknesses. And I think that we're starting to see that a little bit more. And I think Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen are still going to develop into two very good players. I think we're going to get five franchise quarterbacks like they were taken. I think all five are going to pan out to be solid NFL players. I think they all have the capability to be, you know, anywhere, you know, quarterback one through mid-level quarterback twos in terms of fantasy, in terms of receiving ability, I mean, in terms of their rushing ability and what they're going to be able to do passing. Maybe it takes a couple years, but I think you're going to get five viable fantasy quarterbacks that are going to be in that top 16 to top 18 when push comes to shove. And I think a couple of them have the capability to push their way into QB1 with Baker being definite. And if Lamar's rushing like he's been, he's going to be a QB1 for sure as well. Any thoughts, Matt, on the quarterbacks? Oh, Matt's having a little bit of technical difficulty, so I'm going to get back to him in 1 second. So let me transition just to the running back position until I get Matt back, and then I'll get his thoughts on the quarterback position. At the running back position, listen, I just talked about the quarterback position and how impressive the performances have been. The running back position has even been greater, and the upside of some of these running backs moving forward is unbelievable. Saquon Barkley, every single week you watch him, I'm amazed. Listen, you can have the conversation of whether or not the Giants reached to take him, but listen, they didn't reach to take Leonard Fournette-type talent, and Leonard Fournette is a good player. Matt was just talking about him a few minutes ago. Saquon Barkley is generational. You can make the case right now, 12 games into his rookie season, he's the best running back in all of football. Better than Todd Gurley, better than Ezekiel Elliott, better than Alvin Kamara, who's been absolutely amazing since he got on the field. So really impressive that Barkley has been able to do what he did. So totally amazed by what he's doing. I think if you're in a dynasty, you know, startup draft, he's the first pick right now, hands down. Nick Chubb continues to be a flat out superstar for the Browns. You know, this past week, showing the ability to impact the game as a receiver as well. And I think that's something that's unique because, again, he was one of those guys that we just didn't see a lot of it in college. We saw very minimal. We saw bare minimum from Nick Chubb. He has shown that he has a capabilities to be an impactful receiver as well. Maybe not on a level of Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey, but he's showing that he can play on third downs, that he can catch a couple passes a week. That goes a long way in bringing up his fantasy value. I've been saying at times this year that he was a more athletic version of what Jordan Howard was. Jordan Howard had some really good seasons prior to this year, but Nick Chubb is showing now that he's a more complete player than a guy like Jordan Howard. Nick Chubb is a guy who, like I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, trade your first-round rookie pick for Nick Chubb. That's probably out the window right now. It's going to take a lot more than just your first-round rookie pick to probably get Nick Chubb. He's already emerging into an RB1, and that's probably his role moving forward in terms of fantasy. We already know Barkley's there. Sony Michel lights out this week. You know, coming back, big game, over 120 yards. He's going to be a guy who has potential to be an RB1 to mid-level RB2 in fantasy moving forward. Kerryon Johnson, I'd use this injury time to go buy Kerryon Johnson. I think he has high RB2 to mid-level RB2 type production with some RB1 spiked weeks in there because he is very well balanced. I mean, those four guys right there, and we still got Darius Geis, who we didn't get anything from this year. That's five. Philip Lindsay has been one of the stories of the year. Every time I continue to watch him play, I keep thinking Devontae Freeman, smaller guy, but does not play like he's a small running back, is willing to put his head down, finish runs, uses his quickness to, you know, not take a lot of really big hits, that he's a guy in that world of 14 to 17 touches, could be a really impactful player and be an RB2 type player. I mean, heck, this year he's been putting up RB1 type stat lines some weeks, but a guy moving forward who I think rock solid RB2 for fantasy. So, I mean, just think about what we just talked about there. We potentially have one definite top five RB in all fantasy. Another very likely potential RB1 in Nick Chubb. RB2s in Sony Michel and Kerryon Johnson that could have spiked weeks regularly where they put RB1 production. Darius Geis, who I think the upside is an RB1. You know, Philip Lindsay, RB2. And that's still not even saying guys like, you know, maybe Ronald Jones emerges, who I think right now is a hold. I think two guys that I would say sell right now, Rashard Penny and Royce Freeman, if you could still get back decent value second round rookie picks, because I have some concerns about whether or not they ever get a heavy workload and ever produce on the level that what you were hoping for when you took that. Stock up on Josh Adams, the undrafted free agent out of Notre Dame, who has emerged in the Eagles' backfield. Really impressive performance from Adams the last couple weeks. Continue to get in more of the workload there. He could be a guy who I've heard on multiple other podcasts. They've kind of compared him to a guy like Latavius Murray due to his upright running ability. He's got some juice when he gets to the open field. I think it's a really good apt comparison for a guy like Josh Adams. And then one other guy, Justin Jackson, obviously going to get an opportunity to play here with Melvin Gordon's injury. He looked really good when he's got an opportunity this year. I think he's actually going to get a little bit more of the workload than maybe people think right now. He was the guy who tested really well at the combine, even better than I thought in terms of his jumps. I thought he was going to do really well in the change of direction stuff, and he did. Really productive player at college. I know I remember having conversations with Matt Waldman, about how much we like Justin Jackson. He's a guy who intrigues me. I like his overall game. I would try to get him on the back end of my dynasty rosters right now and kind of see how it shakes out with Justin Jackson's talent level. If I take this to the wide receiver and the tight end position, again, the only thing really worthy of note, Chris Herndon continues to develop a good rapport in the Jets pass game, continues to see regular looks. He's a guy who I think has value as a tight end too, and his stock is on the rise. Every time I watch Dallas Goedert be a part of the offense, I walk away impressed. I think Dallas Goedert is still an intriguing guy. I don't think he would cost a lot to buy right now because it's going to be a while before he gets an opportunity. But if you have a deep league and you could stash him, it's not a big deal. I get Goedert on your team right now because I do think eventually when he gets a bigger opportunity, he's going to really thrive and be a productive player. And then at the wide receiver position, Again, we talked about the quarterbacks. I've talked about how many great running backs we're getting out of this. I mean, look at what some of the guys are doing. Calvin Ridley absolutely blew up on Thanksgiving. He's done that multiple times this year. I think moving forward, he's a, you know, wide receiver two, wide receiver three type player who could have some massive spiked weeks. And that's with Julio Jones being there. I think down the line, he could eventually emerge into their top wide receiver and potentially put up wide receiver one type fantasy stats in, you know, in like 3 or 4 years, potentially. DJ Moore emerging into the number one wide receiver for Carolina. I think next year he's got an opportunity to be a wide receiver two, wide receiver three. He's already been putting up that some weeks where he's been putting up those stats. This past week, wide receiver two type numbers. Other weeks, he's put up a couple, you know, wide receiver three type numbers. I think down the stretch here, Carolina's schedule is great. I think DJ Moore could be a wide receiver two / three the rest of this way. And that's probably his role next year as well for fantasy. Dante Pettis stock up. We saw him more integrated in the offense this week, partially due to injuries. But when you watch him play, really good route runner, can play all three wide receiver positions, love the versatility, good hands, you know, very savvy route runner. I like Pettis' overall game. I think next year with Garoppolo back, Pettis is going to be a really intriguing buy during the offseason. I think that I'm going to try to see if I can get some shares of him next year once Garoppolo gets back. Courtland Sutton continuing to have some down weeks here. I would use it as an opportunity to try to go buy him. I've already said multiple times on the podcast, I trade my first round rookie pick, unless it's maybe going to be a top three or top four or something. I would trade if it's in the mid first round or late first round. I still believe in Courtland Sutton. I like the role there. I think he's going to be their, you know, target leader next year, potentially. It's not even, it's unknown whether or not Emmanuel Sanders will even be back there if they move on from him as well. So I still think right now when Courtland Sutton hasn't been producing like most people expected since the DT trade, I think this is a golden opportunity to try to go buy Courtland Sutton and maybe not even cost you as much as I was willing to pay just a couple weeks ago. I think right now it's just a hold on James Washington. You know, we got to wait for him to kind of be a little bit more integrated in that offense. If somebody's kind of upset about his rookie year, I think you can maybe potentially buy low on him. Maybe he went in the mid second round and you can get a late second round or a third round pick for him right now. I would do that. If I had him, I would definitely be holding him. Anthony Miller continues to have good weeks, bad weeks, you know, heavy usage, not so much usage. I think right now that's just, you know, this Bears offense is developing. They have a lot of guys with Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel having a pretty solid year. You know, some weeks it's Trey Burton heavily involved. They got Tariq Cohen out of backfield. Trubisky's running a lot. But if I had Miller, I'd be holding him. I think he's a guy who upside is high. I'd be buying him if the cost was right. I wouldn't go over probably what his draft position was last year, but early second round pick, mid second round pick, I'd buy Anthony Miller at that price. Couple under the radar names, Trey Quinn. He was the last pick in the NFL draft, wide receiver, big time recruit once upon a time to LSU, ended up finishing out his career at SMU. Really good slot type wide receiver. Keep a name, you know, get him on the back of your rosters. Intriguing. Crowder is a free agent after this year. So maybe Quinn gets an opportunity to be the slot wide receiver there next year. And then Matt mentioned his name a while ago, but it was intriguing that he mentioned his name, because I was going to say he's a guy who, if he's sitting out there, check your free agency in your dynasty leagues, you know, and if not, early in the offseason, try to get your hands on Deion Kane. Colts wide receiver. You look at the Colts wide receiver in depth chart, and really after T.Y. Hilton, I mean, there's not much there. I mean, there's a reason why I know Luck likes throwing to the tight ends, but part of that is out of necessity because they don't really have a strong wide receiving depth chart there. I think there's a big opportunity for Deion Kane, who was really looking good, you know, in the OTAs and stuff like that. Really opportunity for him to emerge there if he comes back fully healthy as a part of that offense next year. I like trying to get Kane on the cheap now, or maybe if it's not as a super deep dynasty league, maybe he's even a free agent that you can kind of get right now on the back of your roster. So there it is, the NFL rookie report for week 12. I apologize. We lost Matt on the connection. We have not been able to bring him back in. So I'm going to close out the pod. But it was great to have Matt here for the first three segments, breaking down everything in the NFL draft report, the Devi Slant and the Tale of the Tape. He will be back with me next week. We'll break down everything from championship weekend. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, the early bowl games and also some of the big picture, you know, thoughts on the playoffs once it's finalized. And then obviously we'll mention some name underclassmen names that popped out this past weekend, the Devi Slant, and then we'll round out with the NFL rookie report next week. So Matt will be back to do that with me next week as well. make sure you're in front of TV, guys. A lot of great games on Saturday. All five championship games, you know, are going to be fun to watch, impact the playoffs a lot, and the rest of the college football season as well. So it's going to be fun to kind of watch them with the college football landscape, but then also from a prospect perspective as well. A lot of guys to really hone in this week, and then obviously another week in the NFL with so many rookies every single week. I mean, I could have talked about, you know, multiple other wide receivers, other running backs, so many names to have on your radar, because this rookie class, like I said before, really impressive and really deep in terms of the number of guys that are producing at the NFL level right now, and more that are, you know, haven't even gotten their full opportunity yet that still are going to emerge. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll be back next week to take you from Saturday to Sunday.